You may be thinking, man, can Ross have another lesson on identity? And I told myself that this week too. I said, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to pick some other stuff. And I was like, one of the articles in our bulletin really inspired me to go ahead and go through with another lesson on identity about who we are. And as I studied that, it reinforced something in my mind that's as big a point as any, at least for me. And we'll talk about that as we get to the close of the lesson. But there's some applications of this that are very important, very insightful to me, and maybe they will be as well to you. And so we're going to talk one more time about identity. We may have, last week we didn't have a recorder, but we think Sam might have got it recorded with a little bit of Charlie overlapping a little bit, but that's okay, it'll make it entertaining. But we maybe have that available too for last week. So we talk about identity. My verse carried on after last week's lesson. We taught last week in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4 through 10 and discussed the different items, really our relationship to God. That we have a special relationship with God being Christians. And we discussed some of those ins and outs. And today's lesson, as I mentioned, if you got a bulletin, one of the articles in there inspired this. And basically, it's life against the flow. Our identity here is against the flow. And that's kind of what the summary of what, as we look here in 1 Peter chapter 2, in verse 10, I'll start the reading there. For you were once not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. There is a summary of our life against the flow, against society, opposite of society. And let's take a look at those terms, and we'll draw lessons from it today. As I've indicated, I'm breaking in a new Bible. I'm trying the New American Standard. It doesn't quite lay flat yet, and it's very annoying. But as we look at this, life against the flow, our identity as Christians, we don't just fit in. We don't just mold in. We don't just go with the flow in the world. And that's kind of what this lesson, what Peter's telling us there. We are, first of all, strangers and pilgrims, the King James uses. And basically, but from a stranger, we're foreigner in a land. We are not residents of this land that we're in. This is a temporary place. We're basically immigrants. We're basically aliens. This is not our home. This is not our homeland. Is the idea behind it. As we as Christians live on this earth, we become citizens of God's kingdom. We talked about that last week. We are also pilgrims. Similar idea, but one of the versions actually uses the word exiles. We're exiled here on the earth. Exiled from what? Basically godliness or God's heaven. The spiritual realm, this is not the permanent place. This is not our permanent abode. And so it's the pilgrim idea. There's just one who remains in the place for a short while, a traveler. You know, we're on a journey somewhere. So this place is not our home. And we have a song we sing like that. This world is not my home. And that's basically what it is. It's against the flow. This world is not our eternal place. This is not the end game for us. We have a hope of better and beyond. And I love the reference in Hebrews, because sometimes I always wonder, what did the Old Testament patriarchs, what all did they understand about life on earth? And even Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had a picture or had a concept of life beyond this earth. They admitted that they were pilgrims and strangers, not just in the land of Canaan. Not just when Abraham went to Egypt, wherever they traveled to, they recognized they were strangers on this earth. And so that is the concept here. This life against the flow, this is not our home. This is not the end all for us. And then there's also a war within our soul. a war within our being. Who are we? Who are we to become? And it comes out in the verse 11 again. Abstain from fleshly lust, which wage war against the soul. This is we're at war with these things in ourselves. Whether it's have a strong desire or impulse for things, and it's not just that if there's sinful things we're talking about. We're just indulgence in the world. I have a strong desire for heat today. If we turn the heat off and open the windows up, we would all really have this strong desire for heat, wouldn't we? There'd be a war. There would be conflict in us. What am I going to do about that? We'll get Mark to work on the heat unit. Get it back going again, right? In the summertime, I have this real strong desire for air conditioning. You know, I really like my air conditioning, right? So this is not necessarily sinful things. By all means, we recognize the strong desire in the sinful realm. And the epitome of those things is those who are addicted to, look at drugs and alcohol or gambling. There's those addictions have an unusually strong desire, at least an effect on people's life. But there's a war. There's a conflict. And it's of a carnal nature. Because this world's not our home. There is a spiritual goal and objectives. And these the people Peter wrote to, which was basically in Galatia and around, he recognized, and even here in this very letter, he mentions the fact that at one time we walked in those, he says. In 1 Peter 4:3, it is sufficient for you have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. In times past, they had done those things. In other letters, we realize Christians converted from those, right? There was a war, there's a contrast. They had to change. And when we recognize there's a difference in what even where we're at today and where we want to be, there's conflict there. There's conflict within us on that. And so there's a conflict in us over the desires, a war within our soul. And also we realize when we look at the works of the flesh, I want to tie those in, because we see there the sensual sins, right? It ties into the carnal nature. You know, our society and for many societies that have existed have all craved and gone after and pursued these sensual sins for fulfillment. Well, there's a war within us to want those things and to set them aside. Relational sins and how we relate to other people. There's that desire to retaliate, to have animosity for someone, or like we talked in Bible class this morning, to withhold forgiveness, you know, to hold grudges against others. All those are brought up in those works of the flesh there. So there is a war, and Paul talks about that, the war against the flesh and the spirit. So there's conflict here. It's life against the flow. The flow goes with in our society. Just do what you want to do. Do what makes you feel good. Indulge. And that's not life that God wants us to live. So there's that war going on within us. Then having our conduct honorable before the world, that as we present ourselves, as we live here, we present an honorable and righteous conduct before the world. The world sees we portray to them righteousness. There in verse 11, that's actually verse 12. Keeping your behavior, the New American Standard says, keeping your behavior excellent among the Gentiles. The idea of being righteous or honorable, that as we do live, that we represent God, that they see God, that our life is righteous. Okay, that our conduct before the world is righteous, that it's beyond reproach. And I say that in a limited term, because we can live like the Pharisees. They would make stuff up about Jesus, right? So there's always going to be an adversary somewhere that's going to pick something out. But we do our part to be righteous and live righteous, living against the flow. The world's not going to follow godly virtues. Yeah, they might pick out some that they follow, right? There's the idea of benevolence and helping others. The world sees that as good. But there's a lot of other godly attributes that they don't follow, they don't adhere to. We want to be and need to be, or called to be, showing those things and displaying those things, living those things, right? That our life is honorable. Last week, or week before last, we talked in Philippians 3 that Paul pressed towards the mark of the prize of the high calling of God. In other words, we have an upward calling, a high calling. We are called to be above and beyond what the world is. Honorable in before the world. We present ourselves honorable. We're called. It's against the flow. We will not fit in, and we will not be following what the world follows. We will be different. And they will see that. So we should portray ourselves as honorable. But the world will perceive us and try to charge us being dishonorable. And the reality is that there's an odd paradox there. We're to present ourselves honorable, but the reality is the world's not going to accept that, are they? So keeping your behavior excellent among the Gentiles so that the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. So even though your behavior is to be excellent and righteous and honorable for the Gentiles, when they slander you as evildoers, their good deeds will stand out, right? But so they're going to slander you. It's against the flow. They will slander you. They will charge you to be evildoers. So this is opposite, in contrast to the world. This is against the world. And so as the world looks at us, they're going to call us unrighteous. And our righteous behavior is going to repudiate their life, right? When we choose not to do stuff, when we don't fall into their ways, they will see that. And that's a repudiation, all right? And they may call us and will, Peter says, they will call you evildoers. And so we're going to realize that it's going to be against the flow. We're not going to fit in. We're not going to mold. We're not going to be accepted, at least on some level. We're not going to be accepted. And so it's life against the flow. All right. And so in 2 Corinthians 6, the great passage there about how that Paul calls out for the Corinthians that they've got to be separate. In particular, he quotes, come out from among them and be separate. Okay, and there's a whole passage there that we won't study for today, but you're welcome to go back and read that. And then in the end, God is glorified. All right, and so verse 12, as we've read there already, as they observe our good deeds, and glorify God in the day of visitation. Now, in particular, the day of visitation, when God comes and observes what's going on, when He comes and oversees what's going on, He is to be glorified. And there's a lot of ways of looking at that. Well, I just want to bring out this, that as we do and behave righteously in this world, God is glorified by that. Even when we do endure persecution, God is glorified. That is brought out in Scripture. That even when we endure hardship, the way we endure it is to and will bring glory to God if we do things as He patterns us, as He desires us to do. We've talked in our Bible class on Wednesday nights about the many abilities. In this particular case, there's three or four that's listed there in Ephesians 4. But the reality is God is glorified by our abilities, not ourselves. And you look in Romans 12 as well, as we've studied there. It's not about me and not about you. It's about God. And so in reality, as we live, God is to be glorified in all that we do. And so... that kind of sums up the end of that passage there. As we have now a relationship with God because we're Christians, God has made us, you know, adopted us as children. We've been made part of His nation. We are a people. Now, he brings out and points out that it's life against the flow, that we are strangers and pilgrims here. We're immigrants. We're exiles in this world. This world is not our home. That there is a war within us. There is a war going on. And we're going to make some applications of these here, and we look at lessons. That our conduct should be honorable for the world, but they will still charge us with being evildoers. We will still be charged. It's against the flow. We're going to still be charged as evildoers, but our conduct needs to be honorable to them, to the world. And in the end, God is glorified. So what do we learn from this? What are some lessons? And one of these really stood out to me more than others, but first of all, in reality, is this idea of pilgrims and strangers being immigrants. This is all temporary. This is all carnal. This is all going to be destroyed someday. I love how Solomon mocks the society, the way we operate. In the first chapters, he talks about how a man can build up this great empire, and he's going to, when he dies, he's going to turn it over to somebody. He can do whatever he wants to with it. And whatever you find in life that you find special, and there's something you find worthy, when your kids come along and clean out your house, they're going to throw it in the dumpster. That's what Mark and Mary Jo spent last week doing. They're going to throw it away. This means nothing to us, right? That's the moral of everything we do in this life today. Whatever I do is going to get turned over to my kids. They're going to do what they want to with it. Okay, so this is temporary. This is not permanent. And the reality is we get a lot of feedback from what we have today. We have a lot of immediate satisfaction from these things. We're benefiting from the heat. We don't want to be without it, that's for sure. But this is all temporary. This is all superficial. This is no value in this to speak of beyond this life. It's all temporary. It's because it's not our home. It's not permanent. And in reality, the trials are not permanent. The things, the difficulties we endure here, they are not permanent. All this is temporary. All this is temporary. And so maybe that's something that encourages us in that matter, that these things are temporary. But they are. And that's one of the points made. It's against the flow. The world says, let me build an empire because that is who I am and that's all I can ever be as I live on this earth. But we know in God, we have hope beyond this world. And we can invest in life beyond this world. Whereas in the world that we live today, the carnal world, all they have is what they put their hands on. And so that's where their devotion is. Our devotion is in heaven. That's where our ultimate goal is. So keeping those things in a perspective, it's against the world. So not just heaven itself, but as we live here, our spiritual attributes, those fruit of the Spirit, putting those on and living those, being a godly person, doing godly deeds, people see those. And that's important for us. These are not temporary. These are eternal. The idea of honorable conduct. We are shining God's light. I think Mark has mentioned this. We're not a megaphone. We're not a spotlight. We are reflecting the light of God. It's reflection. It's like the moon reflects the sun. The moon does not emit any light in and of itself. All the light it reflects is from the sun. And that's the same with us. There's no righteousness of our own. We're only reflecting what we've learned from God. We only reflect what we've been able to achieve by God's own grace. Right? We're only reflecting that. And that should keep us humble. But it is a display to the world. And it's important that our conduct is honorable in this. It is important at that. And this is probably the biggest point that I drew out of it, is a life of conflict. We're going against the flow. We're not molding and being adapting to and being part of the world around us. It is a life of conflict. And that's, in reality, that's a challenge. You know, this is temporary. I can put all this effort into building a, if you've gone to the beach, I'm sure everybody's probably at some point tried to build a sandcastle. How long does it take the water to dissolve that sandcastle? About one wave, right? All your work be done just like that, right? It's all sand. That's the way our world is. I got that lovely powdery snow we had this morning. It's just nothing. You can't make a snowman with that. It's just nothing. If the wind would pick up, it would blow it into probably Illinois. It's just because it's just dry and powdery, right? And so everything we have is temporary here. This is all temporary. And so there's that conflict of how much effort do I put into something that's just going to be gone someday. And there's conflict. How much should I really devote to that? How devoted should I? How much effort I'm going to put on that sandcastle as I build it at the edge of the where the tide's at today? How much effort? Well, we can put a lot of effort into it, but what use is it? For a few moments, we can enjoy it. For a few moments, we see its work. But as soon as the tide comes up, it's gone. It's washed clean. Next person comes in after tide goes, there's no remnant of that. That's the same with our life here, right? That's a conflict. That probably not going to sit well with you when you look at how we devote our time and energies. Our desires, you know, where do we find fulfillment? What do we yearn for? You know, there's the carnal that we do yearn for, but there's that conflict there. We want to be fulfilled. I don't like to be hungry. I like to eat. I like to be full. You know, I like sweets. I like to fulfill that. It's a conflict right now in my life, trying to diet. It's like, well, I sure would like something sweet right now. You know, I'm just missing that right now. And so we have that conflict. This is a life of conflict. You know, the world does offer some form of fulfillment. I mean, people look for fulfillment in drugs and alcohol. They do. And they find some false fulfillment there. They find false safety. They find false security there. Very destructive. But they go there, right? Even entertainment. There's a, you know, Dallas Wednesday, there's going to be a lot of people happy here. Right? We're going to rejoice by proxy. We're going to, you know, and you know, there's physical comforts that we have. There is a form of fulfillment here. But it's all temporary, right? It's all temporary. There's not peace peace is not found by giving in to fulfillment in these. There is no true peace, right? There's just no substance in this in long term. You know, I can be full after our meal at lunch here today. I'll be sufficed, right? But you know what? Come 4:30, maybe 3:30, I'll be hungry again. Won't take long, right? There's no permanent fulfillment. This is a life of conflict. So there's an internal conflict going on. And the reality is Satan is real. Satan is active. Satan is not going away. And Peter makes that very point in his book here. And Peter, 1 Peter 5, verse 8 and 9, our adversary, the devil, goes about like a roaring lion. He is there. He is always going to be a source of conflict in our life. And so that's always going to be there. And, you know, I personally have found that as I've gotten older, I have less tolerance for conflict. Sometimes I just want to go away. I don't want a conflict. You know, I'm just going to eat, you know, be happy. Eat and be happy. Be sufficed. You know, because there's sources of conflict that are not good for us, right? There's burdens that we end up entangling ourselves in that are not good for us. But then again, there's just going to be conflict. There's always going to be conflict in our life here. And there's a value in finding peace and being fulfilled by doing God's will. There's very great value in that. But there is going to be a life of conflict. It's just unfortunate. That's one of the challenges of life. And with extension, there's going to be suffering. And one of the things that stood out, and it made me want to, I got sidetracked on this week, because this goes to the whole letter of Peter. Peter references the conflict in the Christian life. I got 5 references here from Peter's first book. Right? Various temptations of being tried with fire in chapter 1, verse 6 through 9. Chapter 2, 15 through 20, enduring grief and suffering wrongfully. Chapter 3, 12 through 23, who is he that will harm you? Don't be afraid of their terror, neither be troubled. They speak evil of you as evildoers. Tying back into we need to portray, be honorable before them, but they're going to look at us and, you know, we're always going to be at against the flow with the world. We're always going to be against the flow. They speak evil of you as evildoers. So even in our best days, there still can be somebody and something in this world that's going to be our adversary. Because we're going against the flow. We're going against the flow. They think it's strange. They think you're strange. This is the same we didn't really... the peculiar people, which is really God's possession, but we may be peculiar, right? They're going to think it's strange. They're going to speak evil of us because we don't do the same thing they do. That's conflict. That's the suffering that a Christian is going to go through. The fiery trial. Partaking of suffering similar to Christ. Being reproached for the name of Christ. And suffering as a Christian. All this is conflict. All this suffering that Peter brings out is real. We're against the flow. We're against the flow. And therefore, there is that challenge in our life. And dealing with that conflict in our life is important. It is important. But don't expect to fit in, right? The moral of the story is don't expect to fit in. Expect it to be difficult. You know, we can talk about, we can achieve peace, and we can rejoice. There's ways of achieving it, but it's still in lieu of enduring suffering and dealing with strife and conflict. It's learning how to deal with those the right way. But those things are real. They were real for the Christians of that day, and they're real for us today as well. And finally, in the end, in all that we do, we want to glorify God. We when we succumb to the carnal or fleshly or the worldly desires, it doesn't glorify God. And in reality, it's not, it doesn't just not glorify God, it degrades and destroys us. We live in a world where the carnal pleasures, whatever they may, they are the single source of fulfillment that our world goes to for those things, and they live for those things, they find fulfillment in those things, but they are degrading. If nothing else, most and many are degrading on the physical level. And our own physical lives are degraded because of those things. But on a spiritual level, it destroys us as well. And we realize that even if the world might find or think that it's good, it's not. And so we want to glorify God in all ways in this life. And I brought out these references here. The trial of our faith, more precious than gold that perishes, though it be tried by fire, might be found unto the praise and honor and glory there of God. And then in 1 Peter 4:7-11, that God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ. That God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ. So as we live our lives, that first reference there was 1 Peter 1:6-9. We bring glory to God. We reflect the light of God in our lives. And yes, we will be against the grain. Yes, we will be against the flow. That will cause strife, that will cause conflict, that will cause contention. And there are ways of handling those things, but that's just the reality of it. Are you glorifying God in your life? Are you conflicted in your life? As I prepared the lesson here, I thought back to when I was a young boy and knew that I needed to be baptized. I was conflicted. I hadn't done it yet. That just ate at me until I'd done it. It ain't a conflict there. So there's a place for conflict. And that was a good conflict. I needed to be concerned to do something about it. And I think as we live our lives, we realize when we recognize the higher calling that we have, and as we realize how we lack those things, there's conflict there. And that part of the conflict is good because that helps encourage us for a better life. And I hope it does in you. And even as I drove in this morning, you know, sometimes I think of my lessons. I don't want to present lessons up here. Of just strife and conflict and stir things up, right? But in the end, as we study, we realize that, man, there's a higher calling we're looking at here. And in many ways, we may be lacking in that. And I hope if that does bring conflict, if it's not right, and it should. And I hope, and I think we all work together in our lives to better ourselves, to become that identity that God calls us to be. And become that person God called to be, that we're honorable as we live in this life, that we're honorable and righteous as we live, and we're working towards that. If you've not been that way and you want to have the prayers of the saints this morning, we encourage you to come let us know. We'd be glad to do anything we can to help you. If you've not been baptized, that's an important step that the gospel calls us to do. The gospel, the plan of salvation, is that we be baptized for the forgiveness of sins. And we receive that forgiveness after we are baptized. And that's so if we can help you on that regard, we want you to let us know that this morning, that we can make that happen for you as well. So if you're subject in any way to our gospel's call, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?